Good evening. Welcome back to Bedtime Stories with Thompson. We're reading from The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. This is Chapter 4, The Second Cylinder Falls. Throughout England that Friday evening, people were having dinner. Working men were tending to their gardens at the end of their daily chores. Children were being put to bed. Young couples were wandering the lanes, and students were sitting over their books. The daily routine of working, eating, drinking, and sleeping went on as it had for years, as though no planet Mars existed in the sky. But in the houses facing the commons, in the villages of Woking, Horsell, and Chobham, people stayed awake, watching the heath burn from the Martian's heat ray. Now and again the heat ray swept the common, catching a few adventurous souls who had gone out in the darkness to see the Martians, but blackened bodies lying twisted in death were all that remained of them. All night long, the Martians were hammering and stirring, sleepless and untiring, at work on the machine that would bring more death and destruction. Now and again, a puff of greenish-white smoke whirled out from the cylinder up to the sky. About 11 o'clock, columns of soldiers came through Horsell and Chobham and formed a cordon around the edge of the common. A few seconds after midnight, a group of people on Chertsey Road outside of Woking saw a star fall from the sky into the pine forests to the northwest. The star had a greenish color and caused a silent but bright flash of light. This was the second cylinder. End of chapter 4. Chapter 5. Fighting begins. Saturday was a day of suspense. I had slept very little, rose early, and went out into my garden to look towards the common. The milkman pulled up in his wagon and greeted me. "Is there any news?" I asked. "Yes, sir. During the night, our troops surrounded the Martians. We're expecting some large guns any time, but the orders are not to kill them if it can possibly be avoided. They also say that another of those blessed things has fallen in the woods." And he pointed towards a haze of smoke in the distance. I decided to walk down towards the common after breakfast, but soldiers had the road blocked off, so I returned home. All during that hot, dull day, the Martians didn't show an inch of themselves. They were obviously busy in the pit, for there was a continuous hammering and a continuous stream of smoke. About 3 o'clock, I heard the thud of a gun from the direction of Chertsey. I learned that the smoldering pine woods into which the second cylinder had fallen was being shelled, in the hopes of destroying the object before it opened. At 6 in the evening, as I was sitting with my wife in the garden having tea, I heard a muffled explosion coming from the commons, followed by a gust of rifle shots. Close on the heels of that came a violent rattling crash, so close to us that it shook the very ground beneath us. I looked up and saw the tops of trees around the Maybury Hill School burst into smoky red flames and the tower of the little church beside it slide down into ruin. Then one of the chimneys in my house cracked as if a shot had hit it, and pieces of it came clattering down into the flower bed below my study window. I suddenly realized that the top of Maybury Hill, where we lived, must be within range of the Martian's heat ray. "We cannot stay here," I cried as I gripped my wife's arm and ran her out into the road. "But where can we go?" she cried in terror. "Leatherhead," I shouted above the noise of new firing from the common, "to your cousins in Leatherhead. I'll go down the hill immediately and rent a horse and cart." While my wife and our servant rushed into the house to pack a few valuables, I went for the cart. As I drove back up Maybury Hill, I saw a group of soldiers enter the village, running from house to house, warning people to leave. I packed my wife, our servant, and their valuables into the cart, then jumped up into the driver's seat. A whirl of black smoke covered the road on our side of Maybury Hill, but in moments we were heading down the other side of the hill, away from the smoke and noise and fire. We made the 20-mile trip to Leatherhead safely, and I left my silent, terrified wife in her cousin's care. I tried to reassure her that I would be safe upon my return to Maybury. After all, I told her, those Martians are too heavy to get out of the pit. My wife would have liked me to stay at Leatherhead with her, but I had to return the horse and cart I rented. In my heart, I was not sorry that I had to return to Maybury. I had been very excited all day, almost a war fever, and I wanted to be there when the Martians were destroyed. It was nearly 11 o'clock when I left Leatherhead, and I had no way of knowing how the evening's fighting had been going. As I came down one hill and Mabry came into view in front of me, a horrible glare of green fire lit the field to my left. Suddenly, crashing into that field was the third falling star. I had little time to do more than glance quickly, for at that moment a blinding flash of lightning, followed by a bursting clap of thunder, startled my horse. He bolted and took off swiftly down the hill. I tried to keep my eyes on the road through a blinding rain beat against my face. Suddenly my attention was diverted by something moving rapidly down Mayberry Hill. A flash of lightning, creating an instant of daylight, revealed this thing. Clear and sharp and bright. It was a monstrous metal thing, a walking engine on three legs, taller than most houses. It was walking over young pine trees in its path and smashing them aside, its metal clattering noisily along with the thunder. Another flash, and it appeared even clearer. It seemed to move by tilting over on one metal leg while two were raised in the air. With this noisy motion, it was able to gain nearly 300 feet with each step. Suddenly, the trees and the pine wood ahead of me parted, and a second huge thing appeared, rushing, as it seemed, headlong towards me, and my horse was galloping right towards it. At the sight of this second monster, I lost my nerve completely. I pulled the reins so far to the right that the tug turned over the horse, and I was flung out of the cart. I landed in a shallow pond and poked my head above the edge just far enough to be able to see. The horse lay dead in the road with a broken neck, poor brute, and one wheel on the overturned cart was still spinning slowly. I held my breath as the monstrous thing went striding by me. From where I lay hidden, I was able to see the thing up close. I soon realized that this was no mere automatic machine. A machine, yes, for it was metal. Atop its three tall legs was a kind of hood, a dome-shaped projection which seemed to rotate from side to side, looking very much like a head looking around as it chose the path to follow. From this dome, long, flexible, glittering tentacles, like arms, stretched out, swinging and rattling around its strange body. One of these tentacles was carrying a young pine tree in its grip. As the monster passed me heading uphill, a deafening howl that sounded like, "Aloo! Aloo!" came from it. During the flashes of lightning, I saw a huge white metal basket hanging behind its body, and puffs of green smoke squirting from the joints of its legs. In a minute, the thing joined his companion, and the two of them headed to the left, towards the green smoke. Reaching a field about a half mile away, they stooped over the third of the 10 cylinders they had fired at us. And that's it for part one
Let's do part two.
Chapter 5.
Okay, please do the other.
Good night. Please do the-